from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made in your average day of school. And think about this. If you're a parent especially and your child goes to school and you think about what schools are teaching our children for the future, we tend to think about the core subjects. We think about math and science and maybe some language, maybe if we're lucky, a little art and music education. We don't always think about building citizens for tomorrow. Now, we know that in some schools, there are fund drives, there are efforts to help charities and various efforts on a number of different causes. But to my knowledge, no one's ever sat down and kind of totaled it up and said, what are our students doing? What are our teachers doing? What does it say about their support for causes? And what does it say about building future citizens? This hour, if you are cynical about the next generation, maybe that'll start to change. And I want to bring in a panel that'll help us understand this kind of new study, what it means for our community, what we're learning about it, and what students are doing to become the future citizens of this country. The Ed Council's heavily involved, and Todd Butler's here. And I know it's not just you who's done all the work here, Todd, but before we introduce the rest of the panel, you know, when we think about building, when we think about what kids are learning in school, we don't always think about citizenship, right?
Absolutely. We've been working, the Ed Council's been working with all of the school districts in the area on a project called Act for Education. And that's actually an acronym that stands for A Community Together for Education. So we knew going into this, both anecdotally and then from having all those folks around the table, that there are great things happening in every district in our area every single day. There are challenges in every district as well. But those great things that are happening every day are things that we're not as aware of and we don't pay as close attention to. And so you're right. I don't think anybody has ever done a study of this. And we really set out to try to quantify what the measure of that was, what the impact of that was.
And how do you go about trying to quantify it?
Well, we did a survey and we sent that survey out to all the districts in the area. We had actually 88 responses, and there are about 170 or so school buildings in the two BOCES areas that cover this area and the city of Rochester. So about half of those buildings responded, and just if we look at those numbers, that survey told us that there's over $500,000 raised by students for community causes, not to benefit the booster club at the school. We said we don't want to hear about that stuff. What we want to hear about is the way that you're actually having an impact on the world. So over $500,000 raised by students and over 105,000 hours volunteered. So that is a ton of time, a ton of money, and over 80,000 objects, whether it's a can of soup or a warm winter coat, the 80,000 objects were collected. So that was, for the first time, really put some numbers to the impact that that students and schools have on the community.
And on the causes side, again, what Todd is saying is if it's an internal school function, doesn't count. Not that it doesn't count, those things are important, but what Todd is saying is they're trying to measure impact on the community and the world. The causes really are a wide range from, well, give me a few examples, Todd.
There's a huge range, everything from elephant conservation to building a school in a developing world country to helping sick kids at Golisano Children's Hospital at Strong.
What do the numbers say to you?
So what the numbers say to me is that there is a whole lot of reason to be optimistic about the future. The numbers say to me that we have students, thousands and thousands of students across every district in this region who are, some of them doing things that, is required as part of a participation in a National Honor Society or as part of a graduation requirement that a school might have. But it goes above and beyond that by a factor of many. And so we have students that are making a real impact, and that's only the first level of impact that this work has. First of all, they're making an impact on the community. That's the most obvious piece of it. The second level is it improves their learning outcomes. And the third level is it means a brighter future for our community. And we can talk about some of the reasons for that.
Yeah, we're going to get into that. Let me introduce the rest of the panel. And we've got more guests than microphones, and which is a good thing. It's a packed studio. It just means they're going to be passing some microphones around. Dr. Adonia Owens is here, the principal at School Without Walls. Dr. Owens, thank you for being here.
You're quite welcome. My pleasure.
Tamari Ketledge is here, an 11th grade student at School Without Walls, currently volunteering. Well, Tamari, can you tell us where you're volunteering?
Well, I currently volunteer at the Isaiah House.
And the rule, Tamari, is you got to grab that mic and get it nice and close to you because there's a lot of us in here. Go ahead.
Okay.
There you go.
I currently volunteer at the Isaiah House and Ronald McDonald House.
Okay, very good. Gina DiPaolo is here, a 12th grade student at Irondequoit High School, senior class president. Is that right? And Gina, grab that microphone. You can give it to Larry in just a second. Senior class president?
Yep, that's correct.
And what do you make of this effort to sort of quantify these results. How do you feel about what your generation is doing?
I think that the millennial generation, if we can be considered a part of the millennial generation.
I think you technically are, right?
Yeah, right. We're at the tail end of it. Yeah. I think we're the generation that's going to change the face of the United States. We are a generation that cares about equality, we care about social justice, and we care about making a change in our community and in our world. I'm so happy that there's a way for our community to quantifiably see the difference that high schools and elementary schools and middle schools are making. So
all
I'm
right,
very
so
happy.
Listeners, especially Tim in Pittsford, who is a regular caller who rips on millennials. This is your Tim, if you're listening, they're going to try to change your mind because, Gina, what do you think some people, what's the stereotype about millennials?
They're addicted to their cell phones. They're always on Twitter and Facebook. They want money. They want to pursue those professional careers and pursue status, yeah. But really, that's not the reality. They use their phones. They use technology as a way to bridge everyone together, to get the word out, and they want to make a change in our world.
All right, we got a lot to talk about with Gina as well. And let me welcome Larry Williams. Larry's a 12th grade student at School Without Walls, volunteering, Larry, for the Red Cross for 3 years. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and also volunteered 9th grade. You volunteered for Goodwill, among another things. You've got a nice resume that you've built. But pull that microphone close to you, Larry, and tell me something here. So when you end up volunteering for the Red Cross or you volunteer at Goodwill, are you doing that because is it part of a school project? Did someone give you an idea about that? How do those things happen?
Well, I saw some other people were doing the Red Cross Club, and then I went in there and tried it out for my first time, and I seen they were focused on helping people with measles, and I thought that would be a good way for myself to help other people who need help.
Wow, helping people with measles. Mm-hmm. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And what did you get from the experience?
So I learned that it's a lot of people that need help and not enough people helping them. So I myself can try to make a difference, even though it might not be the biggest in the world. So I learned that even though we're all one person, we should always try to help others and help as many people as we can.
That's exactly what Gina's talking about. And Todd Butler, who's the president and CEO of the Ed Council, three students may not change everyone's mind. But I take Gina's point there, that sometimes we do stereotype millennials. You probably hear it too, don't you?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that there is great reason to be optimistic about the future once you start looking at it and stop relying on stereotypes. A stereotype is nothing but a crutch that helps us make a decision about something without really thinking about it. And so if we get away from those stereotypes and use a study like the one that's been done here to recognize all the great things that are going on because of youth, like the three people that I'm so proud of sitting in front of us here today, I think there's great reason to be optimistic about the future of our community and the future of our world. And there's a lot of data to back that up also.
Yeah. When it comes to the data, this is a data audience. They're mm-hmm. a prove it to me audience. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. Dr. Owens, who's the principal at School Without Walls. Sometimes we think about schools, city, suburbs, wherever it may be. And we've seen budgets reduced. You know, we're cutting art and music programs, things like that. And it's hard enough just to deal with the day-to-day, making sure kids are prepared for tests. In coming weeks, we're going to be talking about the Obama administration's recent call to reduce testing to 2% or less of a student's annual time in school. But with all of those things that you have to deal with, how does citizenship and these kind of projects, how do they factor in and how should they factor in?
Well, we believe at School Without Walls that they are one of the keys to developing a well-rounded human being. And so we do have a requirement that our students complete 75 hours of community service each year at a not-for-profit of their choice. And what we find is that students delight in going to community service. It takes them out of the building. It gives them experiences that they wouldn't normally get, and they certainly can't get the kind of volunteer experiences in the school building that they have when they're out and about in the community. Tamani actually does her community service at the Isaiah House, and she deals with people that are at their last stage of life. And she has told me that she is so enriched by that experience. And so if it is a mission that we do produce human beings that are well-rounded, that actually can go out and about and actually see and be in the presence of other people and recognize that other people have needs and want to give a portion of themselves, then we've done a good job in educating them.
How do you create, or what is an acceptable kind of location for volunteering in these various projects? Do you have a list? Do you help direct students there? Do they come to you with ideas?
A lot of students come to us with ideas. A lot might want to go back to their elementary school. A lot want to go and to soup kitchens to work with homeless. Many of them want to go to clothes closets. We have students that volunteer at Vietnam Vets, at the American Vets, various food cupboards, food pantries, community centers. Did I say community yep. centers already?
Do they come to you so, and say, hey, I've got an idea, I'd like to do this? Does that happen?
Yes. And that happens often.
And that you I'm sure you welcome that.
Absolutely.
They're creating their own ideas.
They're creating their own, service, and yeah. it means that they're thinking about, where can I go to be of service to someone else? Now, when ninth graders come in, many times the ninth graders aren't quite sure. So we do give them direction. We ask them questions such as, what are you interested in? Do you like to work with little kids? Do you like to work with older people? Do you like folding clothes? Do you like serving food? What kinds of activities? And what might you be thinking about doing after high school? So we give them prompts to help them identify what they might want to do.
I think it's a great idea. Mm-hmm. And again, at School Without Walls, the annual requirement is how much?
The annual requirement is 75 hours. The graduation requirement is 300 hours of community service. And what we find is that many of our students go above and beyond. They have more than one. They like being out there and like giving of their time and of their energy. So we send students out most of the time with more than the required 300 hours. I've never seen a student say, okay, 300 hours, I'm done.
Right.
They usually keep going because they feel a responsibility to the community service site.
Dr. Owens is one principal out of dozens who responded to the Ed Council survey. And Todd Butler, I'm sure that every school is different. Some probably don't even have any requirement. Is that what you found?
Absolutely, that's true. And there are and what we found was that there was a real even distribution across grade levels. Even so, you have kids as young. You know, I would say that those community service requirements probably start kicking in most cases. If there's a requirement, it's going to start kicking in the high school level, maybe at the middle school level. But we had volunteering and collecting and fundraising activities going on at every grade level, and it was relatively evenly distributed across all of those different grade levels. So it's something that isn't just being done when it's required. And there's, as I said, lots of good data around the impact that volunteering has on their these young people when they become adults.
Tell me a little bit more about that.
So Independent Sector did a study, a national nonprofit did a study, and found that not only are adults who volunteered during their childhood much more likely to continue volunteering when they become adults, but they donate a larger percentage of their income annually once they become adults. They're 22% more likely to graduate from college if they're engaged in volunteering. Youth who volunteer, the University of Nevada did a survey about youth volunteers, and they said that youth who volunteer just 1 hour a week or more are 50% less likely to abuse alcohol, cigarettes, become pregnant, or engage in other destructive behaviors. So, I mean, what more justification do you need than that? So it's helping them be more successful when they're students. It's helping them be more engaged as citizens when they're adults. And, you know, in your last hour, you were talking about community engagement and voter turnout and things like that. I'm optimistic that those numbers are going to get better when this generation gets to be voting age.
Listeners, we'd love to hear from you because I want to know, when you grew up, did you have a requirement in school when it came to community service and volunteer hours, et cetera? How did you get involved if you did? And what do you think the impact is, especially on millennials? As you heard Gina DiPaolo said, you might have some wrong ideas about if you're overgeneralizing about millennials. But what do you think about hearing about some of the numbers and some of the impact of volunteering and getting involved and making a difference? The program number to call is 844-295-TALK. 844. It is so hot in the studio, I almost couldn't remember the number. 844-295-8255. That's toll-free. Or right here in Rochester, it's 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Let me ask Tamana Catledge about the Isaiah House, for example. You're currently volunteering there?
Yes, I'm currently at the Isaiah House. And basically what the Isaiah House is a house that likes to take in patients who are, like Ms. Idonia said, at the end of their life. We like to take in patients with the most needs and with, like, the less family. And it's not a lot of young people, a lot of young volunteers there. So when me and my friends go, we kind of, you know, bring the light there and we bring joy there. And we just like to be there for the patients. So
What brought you there again in the first place? Tell me a little bit about that story.
I was introduced to it through a teacher, and it was a whole bunch of kids at first that she brought in to, you know, volunteer there, and they were not committed. They didn't come again. They pretended like they were going to come, and they didn't come. And just me and another student ended up coming, and we stayed through the whole time last year, and I came again this year. And after I completed my hours, I actually continued to go and visit through the summer also. So,
and what are you getting out of it personally?
Personally, I just love it. I love the environment. It does not feel like a house where people die at all. It is just, it is amazing. It's nothing like a nursing home. And I feel like I'm doing something for someone if I can be at the end of their life and make them happy.
Well, that's such a great comment on such an important issue. Now, you're going to graduate. Let's see here. What year are you?
You're 11th grade student. I'm in 11th grade, so 2017.
Okay. 2017. When you graduate and you move on in your life wherever you go, do you imagine you're still going to volunteer, whether it's at this kind of an organization or elsewhere?
Absolutely. I plan on having, hopefully, my own organization where I can donate things to homeless people and hopefully stay at the Isaiah House and continue to donate and volunteer.
That's such a great story. Larry Williams, a 12th grade student at School Without Walls. So you on track to graduate when, Larry?
2016 in June.
Okay, in June. It is 2015. In June. What are you going to do after graduation when it comes to volunteering? Do you think this has laid the groundwork for you to continue doing stuff like this?
Yeah, I believe I'm going to make sure I continue donating, whether it's my money or my time, just to make sure everybody else, whether it's in the community or like in communities elsewhere, make sure they have all the things they need to live a basic, happy life.
You know, Larry, I think you're 17, 18 years old?
17.
Okay, you know, a lot of 17-year-olds, and this is not a cynical comment, it's just an observation, you're worried about getting through high school, setting yourself up for whatever you're going to do after high school, thinking about day-to-day life. It's easy not to think about helping other people. You know, you think about your classmates and growing up, and have you ever thought about what life would be like in a school where there wasn't this requirement, you weren't doing it? I mean, you ever think about the way it's impacted you?
I kind of believe that it makes us more, like, humane because we think about others first before ourselves. So, like, in a school where that's not the requirement, it's more selfish people in there. But when it's the requirement, people learn how to actually care about others without benefits.
Dr. Ellis, you've got to love what you're hearing there. It's like they came
I
in with a script.
I absolutely do. No, they didn't.
We're going to get to your phone calls in just a second. I see the phone ringing. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can communicate with us online on Twitter, at Evan Dawson on Twitter, or producer Megan Mack as well on Twitter, at MMacMedia on Twitter. And let me start with Lynn in Penfield first up. Go ahead, Lynn.
Oh, hi. I work at a local nonprofit, Water for South Sudan. We drill water wells in South Sudan, and we are supported by young people across the country and around the world. Kids read. There's a book about our founder called Long Walk to Water, and we've had schools raise money. The kids read the book, and they come up with their own ideas about that they want to do fundraising. So we have been so impressed. Local schools like Grease Athena Middle School, Avon, Rockport, Harley. So I see a tremendous potential in young people, but they want to know that what they do matters. So the kids who support us, often they raise money, and they know those dollars went to drill a specific well, and it means so much to them. So I think some of these kids are going to grow up and think, geez, if I could do this as a middle schooler, what can I do as a full-grown adult? So I'm very positive about the future.
Lynn, how do you get hooked up with these various schools?
Well, there's a book by Linda Sue Park, who's a local author, and it's now in the Common Core. So it's a requirement, but the fundraising is not a requirement. So the kids read the book, and then they're so moved by the story. They literally, teachers tell us over and over, they say, how can we help? What can we do? And then they come up with all kinds of creative fundraising ideas. So I think them being in charge of things and feeling like, you know, it's not adults telling them what to do, but it often comes from them. Watkins Glen, a tiny school district, raised $15,000 in 4 months last year. They were so organized and motivated. So having ownership, I think, really helps in feeling like they know where their what their money's going to help.
What a great point. Lynn, thank you for the phone call.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And Todd Butler, I have to thank that last point is one of the most important ones. It's not just go here, do this. It's sort of autonomy and really, again, taking ownership, as Lynn said.
Absolutely. And that's a great example. And we heard that a lot in the survey. One of the responses in the survey talked about two fifth grade students who completed a passion project on elephant welfare. And as a result of this research, they not only learned about this topic, but they then took it upon themselves to sell elephant beads to raise money for the International Elephant Foundation. And they were featured in this national organization's most recent publication. So they're being inspired by what they're seeing. This is, I think, the most encouraging thing, Evan, is that they're being inspired by something that they're learning to take a personal action that has a positive impact on the world.
I also think that part of Lynn's comment there about wanting to see the result, first of all, not all of us have money to give. But second of all, sometimes you give money to whatever cause and you don't see the outcome or the result. And sometimes doing something, you know, you go to Isaiah House and you can see it. I mean, Tamani's talking about you don't have to doubt the impact that you make, do you?
No, I don't. I don't. I already know. Like, I was actually awarded a scholarship last year. It was I was so surprised. And I was grateful. I didn't even want it. You know, it wasn't something that I was expecting. I wasn't expecting to get a scholarship.
You're not doing this to get a scholarship.
Exactly. Right, I'm not doing this to get a scholarship. And like I told Idonia the other day, I said, when I walk in there, I have to remember that this is not for myself. I'm not going in there for Tamari. I'm going in there for the patients in there, and I'm going in there for the other volunteers. And I have to remember, you know, what I'm there for.
Well, let me grab a phone call from someone I think who wants to weigh in on that. It's Kristen in the city of Rochester. And okay. Tamari just had this reaction. Kristen, you want to tell us who you are?
Hi, Tamari. You're doing a great job.
Hi, Kristen.
Yeah, we started this program last year. I realized that this could really make an impact on young people, this work. And the Western New York chapter of Women's Realtors offered a grant to us to start this program where we would actually do it in-house, because with this volunteering comes some learning and some teaching. And I have to tell you, I'll never forget the day that we had a resident who was very, very sad. His family hadn't visited, and the girl said, could I go in and visit? And he said, sure. And they went in, and I saw the girls running up and down the stairs, and I finally peeked in. And they were doing selfies with this man, and he was smiling, and he was so engaged in what they were doing, and they left, and they were just on top of the world. She's probably smiling as I'm telling this story,
because as they left the house,
I thought to myself, no book, no teacher could stand in the front of a room and give these kids what they got today. And I have to tell you, at the end of the year, we had a little party, and their parents came. And I remember Tamari walking out, and her mom stopped, and she said, you know, Tamari's a good girl, but she has trouble with organization, and every year she ends up in summer school, but not this summer. And Tamari looked at her mom, and she said, Mom, it's Isaiah House. And I said, Tamari, and she said, but it is. And that was what I was hoping was going to happen. I've heard her tell other kids that have been in the house with her, I have such an appreciation of life because of what we're doing here. So it's had such a positive impact so far, and I'm just grateful that they're getting so much out of it.
I love that story. And Tamari, look, you're not the only one who would struggle with organization. but let me ask you to comment on that. Has it impacted you, again, beyond just feeling good about what you're doing to help people? How do you think the work that you're doing impacts you?
Yeah, I think it has impacted me. It makes me appreciate life. It reminds me of how blessed I am and how grateful I am for my life. And it has made me think, like, when I volunteer at other places like Ronald McDonald House and Cameron Ministries, and I went in Albany and I volunteered, it gives you a good feeling, you know? It just fills you up.
Todd Butler, is there reason to think, is there evidence to think that students who volunteer and are involved with their communities, do they have better grades in general?
I don't have any data on the grades, although Dr. Owens could probably chime in on that. But there's a ton of social skills benefit in terms of understanding, learning to respect others. There's data that shows that they're more cooperative in class and understand better the values of cooperation. That's something you learn through volunteering, right? People working together can accomplish something, and just the risky behavior reduction in terms terms of teenage pregnancy and drinking and smoking and things along those lines. There's really good documentation on that, and there's no way that that can't have a positive impact on their educational outcomes as well.
Dr. Owens, do you have any surprise at all that someone from Isaiah House would say, yeah, they're talking to Tamari about the work that she does, but also how it's impacting whether she ends up in summer school, her work in the classroom?
Absolutely no surprise there. I believe that our students, especially, 10 through 12th graders, do pull the pieces together that make them successful students. They have to learn time management in order to get through their classes, to finish their homework, to complete all of the projects that we require of them at school, and then to get out there and do community service and be on time. And they handle this as if it's a job. They do have to be on time. There is a time that they're to report, and there's a time that they leave. And so their time management definitely tightens up a lot. And I agree, a lot of people struggle with time management. So I do believe that the positive outcomes academically are evident in our kids.
And actually, I just found some data in my colleague Elizabeth prepared me with all kinds of facts and figures. And so I just found one of them that talked about a study of a program, a service learning program that included community service volunteer work, talked about a significant reduction in the risk of course failure. And actually, as paradoxical as this might sound, the more volunteer hours participants worked, the smaller the risk of course failure.
I believe that.
Yeah, great stuff. Let's get a short break, and we're going to come back with our panel here, sort more through the numbers, more through maybe some of what the expectations are versus the reality, as in, do students in the cities versus the suburbs donate or volunteer more? You know, nationally, what do we know? Are we learning anything locally? And we're going to talk to a little bit more with our students, Larry Williams, Gina DiPaola, Tamari Catledge are here. Dr. Idonia Owens from School Without Walls is here. And Todd Butler, the president and CEO of the Ed Council, is here. They're the ones who helped lead this new study into just how giving our local students are and what it means for our community, what it means for their futures as well. Short break and more with them next. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, we'll talk to Nardine Jeffries, who is showing pictures of her daughter's dead body to lawmakers, saying she wants lawmakers to see what assault rifles can do to a child's body. We'll talk to her about why she's taking this approach. Then second hour, the Ethical Business Awards, who won and why. It's all coming up on Thursday on Connections.
This is WXXI AM Rochester, WRUR FM and HD Rochester, WEOS FM and HD Geneva, and WXXI FM HD2 Rochester.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra, presenting Swing is the Thing, an evening of music and dance. Performances showcase jukebox hits of the 50s and swing-era dance stylings. Jeff Tysick conducts November 13th and 14th. Tickets at rpo.org.
Welcome back to Connections. Todd Butler, I want the audience to see some of what you've been able to do and put together. Can they find some of these results online?
Actually, yes. You can find a link to these survey results. Actually, Evan, how about we get you a link to it?
That's perfect. We'll put it on the podcast. Yeah, because we podcast every program, and you can download a podcast usually within about an hour after the show ends. WXXINews.org/connections. And for the podcast that we'll have up in about 2 hours or less, we'll make sure that we've got a link to that data on there. So you can kind of check it out. We're talking about more than $500,000 raised. We're talking thousands of dollars of volunteer service. It's the first quantified look at the way our students are giving, and we're hearing some different approaches. In a second, I want to direct the conversation back to Gina DiPaola, who's a 12th grade student at Irondequoit High School, because we've been hearing a lot about what goes on with School Without Walls, which is a requirement. If you're just joining us, 75 hours a year, 300 hours before you graduate high school, you've got to volunteer. And the principal's been saying, they end up loving it. You know, whether they want to go or not the first time, they love what they do. Most of them far exceed those numbers and the impact it has. But not every school has those requirements. And Todd, are we learning about city, suburb? Is there a breakdown, a differentiation about who gives and who doesn't? Who gives more?
Actually, there was a national study done on that and looked at young people living in rural areas and suburbs. They're actually, rural areas and suburbs are equally likely to have volunteered. Right about 53% of them have volunteered in the past year. But young people living in cities are actually the most likely to have volunteered, 10% higher than that, up to 58%. So there is, you know, not a big gap that you might expect to see there. And people who live in city environments, it's possible that it's easier. There's a stronger connection to those volunteer opportunities for people who live in an urban environment than in a suburban or rural environment.
And Todd, for any listeners who's hearing, well, okay, different school to school, but if your school mandates it, do we discount at all the impact? You say, well, they have to do it. They don't have a choice. And my response to that is, you're hearing students who, yeah, maybe they do have to do it, but they end up wanting to do it. Does that change your opinion of it at all, Todd?
It doesn't. And because we require students to go to class, we require students to take tests, we require students to do homework. And the reason we're doing that is because they need to have that instilled in them as they grow up. If there was no impact on them as adults, no long-term impact, certainly once you become an adult, there's no requirement to do it. But those students who do it, when they're young, are much more likely to do it when they become adults. So I think we're instilling that value in community engagement and in volunteering when they're students and when we have the opportunity to expose them to these things and require it. But then it's taking on a life of its own once they get out and they're making their own choices.
Dr. Owens, I've had a number of listeners send some emails just talking about, just sort of questioning how much time students are required not only to volunteer, but then the other things, and including test taking. And we've heard over the course of the last couple of years, especially from a number of parents, from educators who are concerned about the amount of testing. I don't want to derail the conversation entirely because mm-hmm. every time we talk standardized testing, we could do a whole hour on
yes.
it. But is it harder for students to make time if we have seen an increase in standardized testing? Have we seen an increase in standardized testing?
Oh, absolutely.
And are you concerned about it?
I'm very concerned about the amount of test taking that our students have to do. Fortunately, at School Without Walls, we are a member of the New York Performance Standards Consortium, and our students, in lieu of the Regents exams, all except for the ELA 11, have to complete a series of performance-based assessments, and these are vetted by the New York Board of Regents, and so they are just as rigorous as the Regents exams are. They're just a different way of showing their learning. And our students, like I said, the time management aspect is critical because you really do have to put everything in place in order to be successful with everything that we require at School Without Walls. We also have a senior project requirement, which is a huge project that the students have to complete between September and May that identifies new learning. They have to find a committee. They have to dedicate even more hours of the week working on that project. So our students get a lot of real-world experiences. These are the things that they have to do when they become adults. They have to juggle their time. They have to figure out when they're going to do it and how they're going to do it. So it's the real world.
And just one follow-up on the question of testing. The Obama administration did recently say they want to see, and a bit of a departure, they want to see 2% or less of a student's annual time devoted to test-taking. And you can sort of quantify that in different ways. Is it the actual time in class taking the test? Is it the expected preparation for each individual test? Is it sort of recovery from each individual test? But is there a number that matters to you, or is it simply having a more balanced approach like School Without Walls has, which is more balanced than most that do rely mostly on tests?
And this is our belief is that there one size does not fit all. Every student should not be subject to preparing hours and hours and hours to sit to take a test that shows a limited amount of their knowledge or the skill that they've acquired over time. That writing it down on a piece of paper does not measure who the individual child is. It does not measure depth of knowledge. and it certainly does not measure critical thinking skills. It can't be one size fits all.
Well, let me bring in Gina DiPaolo, who's a 12th grade student at Irondequoit High School, senior class president, by the way. And our most of our panel is here from School Without Walls. They have a requirement of 75 volunteer hours a year. Gina, is there any requirement for you in school for volunteering?
No, there is not. We don't have any minimum volunteer hour requirement to graduate. But nonetheless, I don't think that has any effect on the amount of students who choose to volunteer. Just from my personal observations, I would say that roughly 50% or more of the students at Irondequoit High School choose to participate in some form of community service or volunteer activity.
Just to get back past the testing thing, I don't even know if you've been aware of it, or have you perceived as a student, do you think you're taking more tests and spending more time taking tests than you used to?
Do you mean standardized tests?
Yeah, standardized tests, yeah.
Well, I was actually the group that was ahead of, so I'm a senior, and the juniors below me were actually that group that started to take those Common Core tests, so I missed it by 1 year. So I haven't personally experienced an increase in standardized testing. I've just taken the Regents, like students have done the past couple decades, I believe, but I've definitely seen the pain that the juniors, sophomores, freshmen have endured in the grades below me.
And I know you're not able to quantify this, but just in terms of time balance, are you feeling pretty comfortable that you're able to spend time volunteering, doing work that you want to do, mm-hmm. apart from class, apart from being senior class president? I mean, you're balancing a lot on your own schedule.
Mm-hmm. I've often found that the more I'm doing, the better I balance my time, because I'm forced, because if I don't have anything to do, I'm likely to watch something on Netflix and procrastinate. But if I have a to-do list and I have a lot of things to get done, my work ethic will be stronger. 9 times out of 10.
So this is where Gina and I agree on something. So recently, my wife and son were out of town for a few days, and I wrote down all of these things that I had to get done. You know, I had to read a book every day. I had to write a whole book every day. I had to work out every day. I had to do all these things that I felt like 4 days I've got to do all this stuff, and I was actually paralyzed by the freedom. And I told my wife, please come home, because I don't want the freedom of this choice. Turns out I can't handle the freedom. I need the structure. And that's sort of what Gina is saying, that mm-hmm. in many ways, when you are that busy, you get to work and you do it. But you haven't felt overwhelmed, it doesn't sound like.
Occasionally, but most of the time, I feel like I can manage everything that I'm doing.
When you think about volunteering efforts, first of all, I'm curious to know what you've chosen to do mm-hmm. and what sort of matters to you.
Okay. So in the summer, ever since I was a fourth grader, I volunteered at Stepping Stones Learning Center. It's a preschool for students with special needs and without in the community of
Irondequoit. We know the sentence very well. Yeah, mm-hmm. good people.
And then currently I volunteer for an organization called Together Including Every Student, which pairs students with special needs with students who do not have special needs, and they perform community and school activities together. And lastly, I volunteer for Elder One, which is a program of all-inclusive care for the elderly in Irondequoit.
How many hours a week are you volunteering?
Anywhere, if it's a summer, it could be 30 hours. And during the school year, anywhere between 5 to 10 hours a week.
Wow. I mean, that's more than, it's got to be more than an average time. That's a lot of time.
Yeah, the students we have in front of us are, they're superstars, but they're also not the only superstars in the community. There are students that are putting in that kind of time broadly. And I think, you know, there's the old saying that if you want something done, ask a busy person. And I think that is absolutely true. Mm-hmm. And these students are great living examples of that.
All right, so let's start with Stepping Stones.
Okay.
Remind our listeners, if they don't know, what Stepping Stones is.
It is a preschool. It's on Hudson Avenue, I believe. It recently moved into the old Chase Picken, and it is a preschool for students with special needs, as well as students who do not have special needs. And it's just so impressive, the wide array of programs they have to accommodate all types of students at the preschool.
As a volunteer, what do you do there?
So since I've been in fourth grade, I am known as Miss Gina. I come and sit in the classrooms. I do everything from read books in circles. I help with snack. I help with arts and crafts. I walk the kids out to the playground. So everything that I can do legally, I do. I'm not allowed to technically be in a classroom alone with a student because I'm only a volunteer.
Sure, sure. What do you get out of it personally?
Well, it has been an integral part of my childhood. I will forever remember riding my bike in the morning to go to Stepping Stones at 8 a.m. and coming back at 3 p.m. after a long and tiring day. But it's so gratifying to see over the course of a summer students grow personally, grow in how much they've learned, grow in their social skills. So it's seeing that growth in the period of 2 months and seeing it for the past decade, it is really changed my life, as cliche as it sounds.
I don't think it sounds cliche at all. Now, you mentioned three different things. The second thing you mentioned after Stepping Stones, your volunteer time, is with?
Ties.
Okay. tell me a little bit more about that.
It's an acronym. It stands for Together Including Every Student. It's an organization that was started in Rochester that pairs students with special needs with students who do not have special needs. And the program tries to match the students' interests with one another. So I work with a student who I've known since I was in fourth grade. And for the past 4 years of my high school and junior high career, we've done everything from do Green Team Together, which is a club that collects cans and bottles and recycles them. We've gone to school plays, we've gone to school musicals, even a sporting event, school talent shows. And over the past 4 years, I've seen the student I've worked with grow in exceptional ways to a beautiful young woman who's going to do amazing things for the rest of her life. And it's so touching. We will stay in touch for the rest of our lives, I'm sure of it.
What Gina's saying there, I think, is a very important reminder. I remember being a college student in Athens, Ohio, and wanting to get involved in helping tutor and those kind of things. And I don't remember even if it was Big Brothers, Big Sisters. But I was concerned that if I didn't follow through or have a long-term relationship, that I was worried about that. And it sounds like you've built this long-term relationship.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that it is meaningful to you. It's meaningful to a student. You can see results. Would you offer advice for people who are thinking about a Big Brothers, Big Sisters, ties, tutoring, mentoring, the importance of staying with it?
Mm-hmm. So my advice would be get involved as soon as possible. So if you're in eighth grade, you're not too young to begin tutoring. Mm-hmm. You're not too young to start exploring becoming a big brother and a big sister. And if you're thinking that what you're doing in these programs is overwhelming, remind yourself that you'll look back in 5, 10 years and see how much you have grown and how much the other individual you've worked with has grown and how your friendship has grown over that time. It's life-changing.
When you think about your own peers in school and the volunteer efforts that we're talking about. Again, we talked earlier this hour about the fact that some people like to give money because they can, which is great. I mean, if you've got money to give and you can, that's wonderful. Some people don't have money to give. Others would just rather simply do something more tangible because they can see the results kind of up close and you don't have to wonder about it. How do you sort of think about it into your own future? What do you envision your own volunteering or community contributions in that way?
I think there needs to be a mix of both. Altruism creates a positive physical effect. I believe that's actually a scientific fact, that when individuals volunteer, something physically happens to them that makes them feel good. So I think it's important that every human being goes out and volunteers, maybe on Saturday morning, make it a routine. But I also think it's important that they make strides to fundraise for certain organizations, because it's a reality that organizations need money to function, and sometimes that's exactly what they need, people to rally the troops and raise money for a certain cause.
We should do a whole hour on whether altruism is a real thing or if it can exist. Gina just said it's an altruistic thing to help people, but you feel good. I think that negates the altruism because you're getting too much out of it.
True. Stop enjoying it.
There have been books written about that.
True.
It's so interesting talking to people like Gina DePaula, who's a 12th grade student at Irondequoit High School, senior class president.
Yep.
All right, so speaking as one senior class president to another, I want to warn you that you may regret this.
Okay.
Because for the rest of your life, you've got to plan reunions and all of
this.
Did you know this going in?
When I was an eighth grader, when I ran for office, I campaigned with candy and posters. My mom told me that, Gina, be warned, you will have to plan the reunions. I said, okay. I was 15, 14 years old at the time. And now I'm starting to realize, okay, maybe if I'm in another country, I'll still have to figure out a way to organize.
No,
all
they
this
will find you, and you can't hide anymore.
I know.
They will find you on Facebook. I don't care if you're living in Nepal, which I have a friend in Nepal. They will find you.
Okay. So I'll keep it in mind.
The third thing you mentioned ties, you mentioned stepping stones. What was the third thing you mentioned?
Elder One. It's a program of all-inclusive care for the elderly. It's on Hudson Road. It's actually just across from Stepping Stones. I'm the president of Student Service Club at my school, and we started volunteering for Elder One last year. And we go as a group. We have about 20 to 30 students in Service Club, and we go not every Saturday. We go either biweekly or once a month, and we volunteer from around 9 to 3 o'clock, hosting bingo games, talking to the elderly who are there, and just helping generally with the staff, anything that they might need during that day.
Awesome. And it sounds like you've built routines, schedules, so you know. Maybe it's every Saturday, maybe it's every other, maybe it's every Wednesday night. And that to me, Gina, does sound like, for anybody who's listening, at any age who wants to volunteer, if they think it is a daunting part of the schedule, especially for busy people, and you are a busy person, you build it into the schedule, that's it, it's on the calendar, right?
Yep.
You're going to do it.
I think the best strategy is to pick Saturday mornings. Just go with a Saturday morning, get up at 8 o'clock, drive down to wherever you're going to volunteer, do it, and then come home and start your weekend. If you create a schedule, you are definitely more likely to stick with volunteering than if you just pick sporadic dates.
Dr. Owens, do you want to weigh in on that? That sounds like good advice.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Our students dedicate, most of our students dedicate Thursday afternoon to their community service. But we do have some that do community service after school, especially those that do it at rec centers. And some choose to do it on Saturdays.
Todd Butler is here from the Ed Council. And again, I'd like to spend the last few minutes just sort of resetting what we've been learning this hour and trying to erode the cynicism maybe about about the end of the millennials.
One of my last data points then, Evan, will be on the on that cynicism. There's a from that University of Nevada study, they talked about the fact that 61% of adults see the youth of today as having weak values and morals. All right. As a result, only 20% of young people feel as though adults value them as members of society. Mm-hmm. And when youth don't feel valued as members of society, then they're not going to behave as if they were a valued member of society. So if we can stop stereotyping youth as people who don't care and aren't valued members of society, and think about the fact that we've got three stories here, but we have a whole survey chock full of stories like the stories of these three students here today. Over 105,000 volunteer hours. That's 12 years of time was volunteered by students across our area just last year alone.
At a minimum, by the way, because it's probably higher than that.
And I would guess that it's maybe 30% more than that at least. Okay. And we're going to do this survey again next year, and we'll come back and tell you what the numbers tell us next year too. So we've got story after story in from district after district. And the other thing that I think I want to debunk the superhero part of this, that I don't argue the fact that the three students we're talking to here today would volunteer regardless of whether there was a structure in place. But places like School Without Walls and districts across the area see this as part of their job. Mm-hmm. Community engagement, creating global citizens, is part of the educational task that they're undertaking. So it is a core to what they're trying to accomplish, and they take a very proactive role in making it happen.
Dr. Owens, have you talked to any of your fellow administrators in any school locally who are just kind of asking about what are your requirements? How do you do it? Are you hearing more interest in this kind of
subject?
I'm
hearing more interest. And the biggest question is, how do you do it? How do you get the student buy-in? And that answer is, it becomes a part of the culture. It becomes a part of what you do as a school. You create a common conversation around it, and you create an excitement around going out and helping other people.
So, Todd, it's not unrealistic to think that the next time you do this and then the next time after that, we're going to see increases simply because there's interest. Kids are doing a lot more really positive things than maybe cynical adults realize, but also because it does sound like there's more interest in making these requirements.
I think that's a fair statement, and we're even seeing that at the post-secondary mm-hmm. level as well. Yes. St. John Fisher College and Nazareth College, just as two examples of local colleges in this community, they have there's a Center for Service Learning and Civic Engagement at St. John Fisher College, and there's a Center for Civic Engagement at Nazareth College, and they have found ways to integrate service learning into the program, to the educational program that they're delivering at the college level. And a lot of that is a push that is coming from the students that are coming in. They're coming in and saying, hey, my high school instilled this value in me, and I want to continue this on as a college student. The colleges want to be able to respond to that and take advantage of it and integrate it into the learning.
It was just a few weeks ago that we had a child psychologist on who was speaking at the Pittsburgh district to parents about the relationships we have with teenagers. And he said teenagers tend to be one of the most unfairly maligned groups, and prejudice against teenagers is a big problem in this country. He really believes that. And Todd's numbers, I think, back that up. So before I ask the students one more question, give me those numbers again, the 61 and the 20.
So 61% of adults see the youth of today as having weak values and morals. And as a result, only 20% of young people feel as though they're valued as members of society.
80%. 4 out of 5 kids don't even really feel valued as members of society. Gina, you're such an impressive person. I think you're going to rise above that and tell me that you know you're valued. Mm-hmm. But those numbers still, do they surprise you? I mean, do you see that? Do you feel some cynicism towards your generation?
Not at my school district. I think Mr. Crane and all of the teachers in my high school and teachers in the middle school and elementary schools work so hard to make sure that all students are engaged in any type of activity that they might be interested in and to make sure that their voices are heard. But I would definitely agree that cynicism may exist outside of my own school district, but I'm fortunate to be educated in a school district where that's not a reality.
And the numbers indicate it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. Mm-hmm. Adults think it, students feel it, and the consequence is negative. Do you worry about that?
Yes. The millennial generation has, like I said in the beginning of this interview, the millennial generation, I personally believe, is the generation that is going to change the face of the United States, largely due to technology and largely due to just our general passion. And if we are having teenagers, 20-year-olds, who don't feel that their opinions, perspectives are valued, then we aren't going to be able to change the face of America.
I think that's well said. Larry Williams, kick the mic over to Larry and just let me just ask you the same question. How do you feel? Do you feel like you are valued by adults?
I believe that I'm valued by adults within like the school system and stuff, but I see that like when I go out in public, there's like the adults who look at us and think that we're like worse than them. And I really believe it's not fair because, you know, we're all the same. And, you know, they were in our shoes once. But I believe that eventually they're going to see that we're doing good things.
Let me ask Tamari the same question then. How do you feel? You feel valued?
I'm going to tag along with what Larry said. I feel like the adults in our school are very, very, very supportive, especially Dr. Owens. We can talk to her about anything. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And adults, I think they tend to think, like, I've been through it, so I can, you know, I know how you feel, or they feel like they can put us down because we're younger than them. I feel like that. But like Larry said, our school is very supportive. And
well, yeah. Think about the adults now who think every kid is on their cell phone all day. Gina said earlier this hour, that's one of the perceptions are that, well, you're only on your cell phone, you know, you're self-absorbed. Well, some of those same adults probably were viewed by their previous generation as being addicted to the television, right? Mm-hmm. So technology comes along. New generations kind of get a hold of it. And yeah, I do. Sometimes I think we do get too wrapped up in the technology. It happens. But I think we've had great reminders this hour that it's not always that way. It doesn't have to be that way. There's really, really good things happening. Todd Butler, I'll give you the final word here. I really commend you for the work that the Ad Council decided to do on this because I've never seen numbers like this. I know you're going to keep doing it going forward. 20 seconds. What's some of the feedback that you're already hearing out of this?
Well, we've had universally positive response to this survey, and our goal was not to create a stack ranking to say that, you know, School Without Walls is better than this school or better than that school. There are just great things happening in every district every day, and we want adults to recognize that, support the schools in their efforts to help students, and when that kid comes to your door selling candy bars, buy a couple.
Thank you, Todd. Thanks for the work that you do on this. And again, we'll post it online. When we post the podcast, you can see a link and you can check it out yourself. That's Todd Butler, Dr. Idonia Owens, principal at School Without Walls. Great work. Thank you so much for being here. From School Without Walls, Larry Williams and Tamari Catledge, thank you both for being here. And Gina DiPaola from Irondequoit High School. Gina, great to see you. Thanks for listening today. John Andrus, our engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson, and this has been Connections on member-supported public radio.